The Bean Scene Cafe and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you listening this morning. We're also pleased to welcome back to this program the man we like to call our chef in residence. Now, let me hesitate to point out that this is a purely honorary title, but it's an honor we have bestowed on him for many, many hours of good times that we have had when he's been here on the show. Doyle Moore is his name, and once a month, on the first Wednesday in the 10 o'clock hour, we talk about food and cooking and have been doing this now for a long time. So you no doubt have, unless you're completely new to this program, you've heard Doyle on the show before. And you know the idea that we pick a topic. And when I say we, I mean he picks a topic. And we have talked about a lot of different things. We've talked about sometimes cooking from different American regions, different places around the world. Maybe more likely we focused on a particular dish or maybe a particular technique and then said, well, tell us how you do this. Do you have some way of approaching this that's different from that other people do? And if you wouldn't mind telling us about it, well, share a recipe. And we've done that a lot. This time around, he said, well, here now we're going into a new year. And he would be curious to have people call in and talk about something that they made in the last year that they had never made before, something that to them was brand new. And my sort of add-on to this was that it wouldn't necessarily have to be anything particularly exotic, something not doesn't mean something that you invented, but just something that for you was new. That a recipe that you came across, a technique that you came across that you had never done before, and you did it, and then you said to yourself, now why did I just discover this? And if you would, call in and share it with us. So that's the, and then sort of secondarily, he said, and he also might be just a little bit curious that if, to hear about people who got some gift over the holidays that was cooking related. This could be some kind of food product, could be some kind of device, something like that. And he says, now, what I really want to know is, did you get something that you are afraid to use? Or maybe part of the thing is that you got something and you don't know what to do with it. You don't know how to use it. You got this thing and it's wonderful and you think, well, okay, now what do I do with this? We can talk a little bit about that. And anything else that happens to be on your mind, you want to give us a call and say hello, you can do that. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Good morning.
Yes.
Glad
hello.
To have you with us. Either you got to move or the microphone's got to move. I want to. Yeah, there you go. Let's see.
That's better.
That's better. We just went in to keep you close and squarely in front. Glad to have you here again. Happy
well,
New
thank
Year.
You. Boy, this last month went by, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Actually, I think the whole year went that way.
Well, I'm happy to be here again.
So was there something in particular that you were making that started you thinking about this as something we could talk about?
Well, yes. I was searching for some subject that would make any sense, and I came across two very peculiar little recipes. And I thought my first concern was what a peculiar material to cook with. It was pureed peas, and other than doing Gerber's, you don't. Except, I remember that in the 70s and 80s, when we began to do the cuisine nouvelle, all the new stuff, there was a lot of information about pureed vegetables being used as thickeners. That was what they were mostly. You'd mash up potatoes and put them in a soup to make a nice thick soup, or use that to make gravies or such things instead of the flour and oil kind of preparation. And I had an idea. I have an idea that these are remnants from that didn't go away. So I came up with two recipes that indeed I'm going to try. I haven't made them yet, but I am going to try them. And I thought there's a lot of people that probably want to know whether they dare try something or not. And so mm-hmm. partly the answer to this to today is yes, let's do it. And then The other part about helping people get started on their new pieces of equipment, I've already told two people. This is why I thought, well, this is important. They got something and they said, oh, but I can't use it yet. My God, it's a coffee maker. Yes, and I've had it for a year. What?
So what was there? Was it just that they were saving it, or that somehow it seemed something about it seemed complicated, and they weren't quite sure how to figure out how to use it?
Exactly, they wanted the assurity that they could operate it before they operated it. I mean, and I thought that's such a complex situation, but it's very interesting that this would really befuddle people who shouldn't be befuddled, you know. Yeah. So I thought it was kind of a curious thing. I thought, well, we'll just add that. So that's why what's new is the curiosity of the day.
All right. 333-9455 is the number. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, we do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, I can certainly understand not wanting to. You should never, if you're going to make something that you've never made before,
yes,
and you're having company, don't make this the first time that you've made this.
That's true.
You should do a run through. You should try it once or twice. Don't make that the first time. But and so I can understand not wanting to do that. But if it's just you and you're thinking, well, I'll make this thing, and if it doesn't come out, we will throw it away and we'll have a sandwich or something. Why not? Go ahead and try
something. And try it. Most things are easy enough to do, but you just have to have a mindset that says I can tackle this and make it work.
Yeah, and I suppose too, the first time you make something, at least in my experience, the first time I'm making something, I'm asking myself, am I doing this the right way? Is this the way that it's supposed to be?
And yeah, exactly. So many cookbooks, they don't help. Want a model.
Yes.
of what might this. What might this be? Yeah.
Well, even what's it supposed to look like?
Yeah.
Give me a picture.
That was one of the greatest things, I think, in cookbooks was when they began to put pictures of and steps. All right. This is the first step, second step, and pictures. And that has grown greatly. Almost everything now has progressive steps of what it should look like and such.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Well, do you want to share one of these recipes?
Well, I just happen to have one right here, but as I say, it does make me laugh. But when you stop and think of it, it makes sense. This one is pasta, a pasta with almond pea pesto. say that three times real fast. And it's exceedingly simple. You go ahead and use the pasta, generally penne for this because this is kind of a thick heavy pesto, so the penne will hold it quite well. And it doesn't take very much material. Two packages of peas, two 10-ounce packages of frozen peas, and you thaw them. And then a half a cup of blanched almonds, and you'll have a lemon, and you'll get the juice, and then also grate the zest off of that, and a quarter of a cup of olive oil. So that's all of the materials that there is. So it's in the food processor, and you grind up the almonds and add the lemon zest and the juice, and then the peas that you've cooked the peas just a little bit, not a whole lot, but just a little bit, so that they're still fresh, and add the olive oil, and you're done. I mean, it's peas and almonds and lemon zest and olive oil. That's it.
Huh.
And I thought, how can that be that simple? And uh, uh, and And would it be good? Well, I did make an elaborate dish last night with a lot of peas in it. The Lebanese soup that I know we talked about a long time ago, I made that for supper last night, and I thought, well, there it is, peas. So anyway, almond pea pesto, and it's just, you know, zip it up and it's done. And I thought that's even faster than the regular pesto, and the almonds give it a nice character. I found something which I didn't know even existed, ground almond powder. I mean, it's really ground almonds, but they called it almond powder. And I didn't know you could buy that. I know that you use it a lot in making flourless cakes. So I bought a pound of that, and I'm excited to look. I'm looking forward to using that. But it'll be in, and again, it for flourless cakes, you don't use flour. So you use ground almonds, and these are finer ground than I could make in my own cuisinier. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to using that. Just my looking forward is that's what I'm looking forward to do.
Well, it's first Wednesday of the month, and it has been a long time our pleasure here at first Wednesday of the month at 10 o'clock to talk about cooking with this guy that we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. And this time around, he said he'd just be really curious, and as a way of starting off the year and saying this is the first time and we're going to do thinking about new things. He's just curious, is there something that you have come across in the last year that you have made? And for you, this was the first time that you had never made this before. Maybe you could tell us about it. Or if by the same token, and I expect that probably there are a fair number of people who have had this experience, someone has given you something, or maybe you even bought it for yourself, some kind of a kitchen gadget, some kind of device. And then afterwards, you sat there and you looked at it and you thought, now, what am I supposed to do with this thing? How do I work this, as the talking heads would say? So any and all of that, if you want to give us a call, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Now I have a question. You hear someone wants to know where you get that ground almond.
Oh, the almond powder?
Yeah, the almond powder.
Well, as a matter of fact, I got it at Trader Joe's in Indianapolis.
Oh, okay. So not... It was not purchased here in Champaign.
It was not purchased here in Champaign. No, it wasn't. And I was surprised to see it there, although I shouldn't be because they have all kinds of exotic stuff. Maybe somebody will help me. We bought a package of dried dragon fruit. What on earth do you do with dried dragon fruit? It's from Thailand. And it's pretty sweet. It contains more sugar than I need to deal with. But I'd never heard of it, and it actually looks like a hyper slice of what do you put on pizzas? The round
pepperoni.
Pepperoni. It looks like pepperoni. It looks like pepperoni, except it's dark red. And it's called dragon fruit. It's a thin slice of something that probably is a fruit about a bigger than the size of a black walnut in the hull. And then they slice that and dry it, and it's going to shrink up just a little bit. I have no idea how that's used. Maybe someone can help me figure out so that I can go back and get it next time. Right. It's also at Trader Joe's.
You got your dragon fruit recipes? Give us a call. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, I got one for you.
Yes.
Last year, Mrs. Inge gave me a beautiful, big, cast iron skillet. Now, I have cooked in cast iron before. Uh-huh. Particularly, it seemed to be places where I went someplace for a while. The cottage that we like to rent when we go on our vacation—that's what there was. So I cooked in it, and I sort of understand how to cook in cast iron and how you take care of it and all that kind of stuff. And somehow the idea we would go into cooking places and I would see cast iron cookware and think, oh, wouldn't that be great to have a nice piece of that? And so she was paying attention. So she bought me the skillet, and I thought, oh, that's lovely. And so it's sat all this time. I haven't used it. And it's, and I guess it's because we have a range of skillets. We have nonstick skillets. We have good stainless skillets. And I use one of those whenever I need a skillet. Somehow I must have it in my head that there must be some special circumstances under which you want to use cast iron. Now, I guess for frying things, particularly,
yes.
You know, so if I was frying catfish or something,
exactly,
that would be the thing.
Because the cast iron is thick and it heats up, and it heats up evenly, and you can actually heat a cast iron hotter than you can other skillets and other things. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I like most about cast iron, of course, I recall my mother always being perplexed about it being so heavy, and lifting it and carrying it and all of that was a real chore for her, and I was sorry that was that difficult. But I have two favorite cast irons. One is very, very large, and that's something if I'm going to have a dish for a lot of people. I mean, you could fry 20 sausages in it. You know, big sausages. Mm-hmm. You could. I mean, it's huge. It's that big around. Well, it used to belong to a fraternity, so it was what a fraternity would use. And the other one I have is a 9-inch, and I like it very much. And once you get a cast iron skillet cured, then the truth of the matter is you never wash it. You can if you want, sprinkle salt in it and take a paper towel and wipe, and then the salt picks up all of the excess materials. Mm-hmm. And then you dump it out. You don't want to wet it. Because, and I didn't believe this, but it is true. I believe it now because I've seen it. Metal is porous. You just don't think of cast iron. It's porous, and when you heat it, it opens up and it accepts some of the oil into the metal, actually, and that's what the curing part of it is. Mm-hmm. And so if you wash it with detergents that dissolve grease, then you end up with all of that gone. And I know it sounds like you're being unsanitary, but wiping out carefully. Oh, you can use hot water. Hot water is what you finally do, but don't put any soap in it. So after you've wiped it out, you can put a lot of hot water in it and scrub around with that if you want. But it's interesting. Then you want to dry it on top of the fire so that it doesn't rust, mm-hmm. And you can just keep using it over and over and over and over again. I would say yes, frying. Although you probably don't like to fry too much.
Not that much.
Yeah.
No.
I of course you see I am very, very fond of my wok, and I'll use the wok 40 times, but in the wok I can't fry that well because it's a round bottom, and it's difficult for me you can fry small things if you're doing stir fries. You can, but a big chunk of fish, it's a little harder, unless you change and do another style of cooking. So try it. You'll like it.
All right. Well, let's talk with somebody here. Someone on a cell phone, our line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, I'm calling. I received a meat grinder sausage stuffing attachment for my KitchenAid mixer. Yeah.
Oh, you got one?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't really used it yet, and I've realized I don't know where to find sausage casing.
Now let's see. What? Let me think. Where? Some. Ooh. That just came. That information just came about a month ago to me. Someone, I think that in Champaign here, you can buy casings, and I'm trying to remember who it was that sold casings. You know, the first place that I think I would do it, I'd go to the meat store on the campus. There's
The one that's the university, meat science,
yeah,
department,
meat science,
or whoever it is,
yeah,
where you can actually go and you can buy meat that they have raised.
I would think that they because they make sausages there, and they would certainly know where to get sausage casings.
Okay.
There are real ones. By that I mean intestines, animal intestines, which is what they really were used for so long. And then there are some artificial ones. So either one of those, I'm sure would be available. That's where I'd try to find out where they are. There's a lot of people that make their own sausages. And we have a lot of meat plants around this country, around these counties around here. And I know that they make sausages as well. So it is available. But I'm not sure where now.
Okay, well, good. I'll give it a try.
Well, be sure to make some good sausages, because that is a treat.
Well, I hope so.
It's a treat.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, my favorite pan is an iron skillet.
Yes.
And it's wonderfully seasoned, and you know it's perfect for everything.
Yes.
So you just use it for all purpose, for all your frying needs?
Yeah, well, frying, sautéing, even making cornbread.
Cornbread. I was just going to say cornbread. I had cornbread at a friend's house a couple of nights ago, and the skillet was brought to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Very elegant.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I do actually have a little cast iron skillet, and I'm sure I've talked about this before, that my mom gave me, that is for making cornbread. It's divided into wedge-shaped compartments.
Yes.
And it is fabulous. I love it, because you get these little wedge-shaped muffin kind of animals, and they, on all the sides
they
that
got
touch
crust
the pan,
on all the
they
sides.
Have crust
yes.
on them.
Yes.
And that's primo. That's really lovely. And so, I know about that. And I think this particular skillet, this one that I got, it's pretty big. I think it would be too, unless you were making one very, very large cornbread, it wouldn't be quite the thing for that. You probably want to get a smaller one for that. But, okay, well, I'm just going to have to get flying, I guess. Let's talk with some other folks here. Belgium, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Now, beans. I've been washing my skillet out for years now.
Yes.
With detergent. What is that? What kind of adverse effect is that?
Well, it will dissolve and carry away the grease that you have used to season your skillet with.
Yeah.
Because if it isn't seasoned, it's just not going to cook right.
Okay.
And as I said, it's that curious thing that I didn't want to believe, is that the metal actually opens up and absorbs the fats and oils into it, and then it's not really a surface. But it is kind of a prepared surface that makes the rest of the cooking very easy. And if you dissolve that and just scrub it and scrub it and scrub it and dissolve all of that, then you really should re-season it after you've cleaned it every time.
Now, then how would I do that?
You would put it on the stove and heat it up, and then take a little bit of oil and a paper towel, and then just rub the a little bit of oil, not a whole lot, you know, less than a half a teaspoon for the whole thing, and rub it, and then while the skillet is hot, then it'll kind of dry it up anyway,
yeah.
And you put it away. That and do that as quickly as you can after you've washed it, and that will re-season it and make it prepared for the next time you want to use it.
Okay,
it's just
that's simple enough.
Old stuff, yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Right, bye.
I actually think that what happens, the effect of having that oil absorbed in the
yes.
pan is that it in effect creates a non-stick surface, stuff that doesn't really stick to it.
You're right. except I'm not so sure that it's a nonstick surface. That's what I mean.
Well, that's okay.
I didn't know if it was a cushion or if it really is a surface or if it's just an attitude that the metal takes. But yes, it is to keep it from sticking.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like trying to be sure you put enough oil in it when you're frying an egg. I do recall the first egg I tried to fry. And I went running into my mother and I said, "It won't sizzle." I knew it was all oral to me, you know. I knew that the egg is supposed to sound like this. It isn't doing it. What am I doing wrong? I didn't put any oil or bacon or anything in it. I wasn't very old, but I tried.
All right. Well, let's go to another caller here. Champagne, line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I tried something last year that maybe it's been known for a long time, but as you know, I just never did it, and it works beautifully. I mixed half oil and half butter.
Oh,
when
yes.
I'm frying things, and it doesn't burn, and yet it still gets a lot of the flavor.
It gets good flavor, yes. And
it works really well. And, you know, I use the Smart Balance.
Yes.
Margarine, so it's a lot less cholesterol and
yes.
stuff like that, and still you get the good flavor. And you don't get the burning that can happen with butter.
Exactly. Well, what is burning in the butter are the milk solids. If you were to melt a pound of butter, and that's called in Western culture, that's called clarified butter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use that, it won't burn. Because you've eliminated the milk solids.
Oh, okay.
And
much harder process.
Yes, but now you can also go to some markets here in town and
uh-huh.
buy ghee, which is a product from India, and
uh-huh.
it is clarified butter itself. And you can fry at higher temperatures or use that at a higher temperature, and it won't burn as you're saying.
Is it a solid? Or is it a
ghee is yes, no, it is solid.
It is solid.
But there are no milk. There are no milk solids in it.
Okay.
It's very easy to use, and a lot of people just use that, like we used to have the drippings, the drippings pot on the back of the stove, and you would use that. Well, ghee will work quite well, but
okay.
clarified butter is a good product to have. Simply
no,
because
that's a question, because you brought up the drippings.
Yeah,
you know, I do save mine, but I don't use them, then I just throw it out.
Oh, well. It's probably more of a health hazard than you want to deal with.
Okay. Especially like for bacon drippings. I've been
yes.
wondering about should I just put that. I do put it aside in a jar, but I don't know how to use it.
Well, if you're going to do eggs, then you put a tablespoon of that in the pan instead of oil or a fat. But
now, does that help with the burn? I mean, it doesn't burn then because it doesn't have any of the milk.
Well, that's right? True. It will you can cook higher with it. Yes.
Okay.
But
okay.
I'm afraid that we have tried to avoid that kind of fat intake, and so you're safer using the Smart Balance because I use it myself.
Yeah,
I use Smart.
It works pretty well.
It works pretty well.
Yeah.
But if you want to give yourself a treat, get a slice of bread.
Okay.
and put the drippings in the pan and put the bread in and not toast it, but fry it. Oh, a piece of fried bread is just exotic. Don't
really?
Yes.
I've never, you know, I do that when I make grilled cheese. I do that in a frying pan.
Yes, you do. And you don't use quite as much fat that way.
Okay.
You don't want to use a lot of fat.
Right, because it just slightly toasts it.
It toasts it, but then it it melts into it. That's an old English breakfast treat.
You do
is
that.
Fried bread.
Well, maybe if I get brave enough, I'll try that. But here's the thing I tried this year. In fact, just yesterday, we got a crock pot for Christmas.
Yes, good.
And never have used one before.
Uh-huh.
And made a great beef stew last night. And it was so easy. Put it in the morning, and we came home at night.
Yes.
Scooped it up, and it was great. And I just, you know, with the crock pot came a few recipes for other stuff. But one thing my brother-in-law said is he uses it to cook his pork chops in it. Now, I didn't see a recipe in there for it and wondered if y'all had any ideas for how to do pork chops in a crock pot.
My guess would be saute them so that they're browned on both sides, and then put them in the crock pot and put a little bit of liquid and kind of braise them. They're not, you don't want them to boil because you end up with kind of boiled meat. I'm thinking that he might be braising them. And if you do that, then brown them first and then you'll have a nice flavor of meat.
Oh, okay. And then any kind of liquid, broth or water even?
I would use water. If you do just water, I'd throw some vegetables in, you know, a chunk or two of carrots and some celery so that you get a little more of a flavor instead of just water. Because, as I say, you'll end up with something that's just awfully boiled taste. I would use beef broth.
Okay. Okay, that sounds easy enough.
I think it would be. And then kind of let them braise. And you do it slowly, so then that works.
Okay.
Great. Well, congratulations on finally coming to grips with a slow cooker.
I know, isn't that funny?
It is good,
though. It's been around forever, and it's such a time saver too. It's great.
So it is, does it have a glass lid?
Yes, it does.
See,
and
so if so, you just sit around the table and everybody watches it cook. Entertainment as well as food.
There you go.
That's
there
it.
Go. Okay. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you for calling. Well,
thanks for the call. I think that shows you, that's an example. I think the crock pot is an example of one of those things where you have some kind of cooking device. It's extremely popular, and then it sort
goes
of
away.
Fades away. But and now it's started to come
it
back.
It has started to come
and,
back.
And I'm sure that probably if the listener or anybody else was interested, if you now go to the library, go to the bookstore, you're going to find books. Probably some of them more recent books on using the slow cooker.
Oh, yes.
With lots and lots of recipes.
Yeah.
And in fact, I know that Celeste in the afternoon within the past couple of years has talked with someone, and I apologize because I couldn't come up with the name of the person or the book, but I know has talked with someone who has written a recently published book within the last couple of years for recipes for the crock pot.
I'm
sure that they're out there.
I think I heard that too. I know that there is, yeah.
Yeah. Doyle Moore is here. He's the man we like to call our chef in residence. He's here once a month, first Wednesday in the 10 o'clock hour. We talk about cooking. And this time around, he said, well, it's a new year, and he would be interested in hearing from people who came up with something that you made, say, in the last year that you had never made before, brand new. Or, by the same token, some cooking device that would be new to you, as the previous caller said. Well, she got a crock pot and had not cooked in one before. And I told my story about how I've had this cast iron skillet and I wasn't exactly sure what to do with. And, in fact, I think we have somebody here who wanted to share some cast iron tips. Whatever you wanted to do, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We do have someone here on line one on a cell phone. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I was delighted to hear you talking about cast iron skillets, as my great-great-grandfather, Joe Lodge, created the very first cast iron skillet.
Oh,
you're a Lodge of the Lodges?
Yes, I am.
Of the
I
cast
am
iron Lodges? Wow.
Yes, I am. And as a matter of fact, you can get them in Urbana at Art Mart.
Well, I think that this, as a matter of fact, I think that the one that I have is, in fact, a Lodge.
Yeah, it should be if it was made in the United States.
Yeah, yes, yes, I think so.
So our family's been cooking with just about nothing, but if I'm caught with a Calphalon or something like that, I have to hide it from the rest of the family.
I like that.
But I have, personally, I wash my cast iron skillet with boiling water and a scrub brush.
Yes, all right. And no detergent.
No, absolutely not. And then I drop it on the stove and let it dry just a little bit.
Yes.
And I always wipe it with oil afterwards.
So you always keep it seasoned afterwards.
You know, I do that. I actually do that with my nonstick, too. It just seems to work better.
Oh, it's just a technique, yeah. And
yeah,
you get
it's
used
just
to
how
doing
I keep it,
it.
Clean. Hmm. Now, you can buy them pre-seasoned nowadays since people are afraid of seasoning them. But seasoning them is really quite simple if you buy one that's raw. You just have to wipe it with Crisco very lightly, turn it upside down in your oven, and bake it for a couple of hours. And it's perfect.
And that's,
that way the oil drips down and out instead of into the pan. And,
that's good.
In addition to that, one of the nice things about cast iron is for those of us who are trying to, you know, keep our vitamin content up, it actually does supply trace iron into your food.
I guess it does, doesn't it? Yes.
Yes, it does. Yeah, and I think that's about it. Oh, I had one more tip that I found extremely helpful. If you've inherited a cast iron skillet that is, say, has not been really well taken care of and it's got sort of a cracked or bubbly surface to the seasoning and it's not working real well, what you can do is put it in a self-cleaning oven. And all that seasoning will be removed.
Oh, yes.
Then you brush it clean and re-season it. And it will last in a lifetime, or several, actually. So.
That's right. Yes, I forgot about that. That's another way you get burned food off of something that you simply cannot wash it off. You cook it off.
Yeah.
And it falls into ash. Yes.
Yep.
But you're going to, in doing that, you really do have to very carefully season it all over again and work with that. But
right.
That's exactly what you do. Well, that's good.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yes,
thanks for
coming.
Very
all
good.
Right,
all right. Well, let's go on here. See, you never know who's going to be listening.
You're absolutely
to this
right.
Show. You never can tell. Someone here in Champaign who is also on a cell phone, line 3. Hello.
Yeah. Two really quick comments, one about the oil and butter thing and the other about slow cookers. I must confess I haven't gotten anything new recently on cooking, but I've been awfully busy. But the oil and butter, I've been doing that for a couple of years. My stepmom showed me that. Take either light olive oil or canola oil.
Canola,
mix
yes.
Mix it half and half with butter and use it wherever you would use margarine or anything else. It's a little bit more expensive. But gosh, does it actually taste good? It tastes like butter. I mean, you don't notice the canola oil, and it spreads, and you can just keep it on the counter, no trouble at all. Or if you put it in the refrigerator, it continues to spread. The one slightly odd thing about it compared to either oil or butter is that it will pick up a small little bit of mold, which you can just scrape off and get rid of.
Huh.
I don't know why, because the other two don't mold. But
the other two don't mold, no.
But it does. But if you just, you know, scrape it off and get rid of it, it goes away. It's harmless.
Yeah. Oh, I'll look out for that. Yeah.
And you just have to make it yourself. I mean, I just, you know, put it in a mixing bowl and mix it up. I mix it up in half a pound of butter and then roughly the same weight of oil.
Uh-huh.
It's not real important that you get it exact. Just, you know, cover the butter with oil, mix it up. And then just put it in and it's great. I mean, and you're basically getting a whole bunch of this you've cut half the saturated fat right out.
Yes.
And you don't notice it at all. The other one on the slow cooker, I've had one for a couple of years, and I found that you really have to cut back on liquid in a lot of recipes. A lot of recipes that I'd made for years, I just start going, oh, need only about 3/4 of the water.
Uh-huh.
Or it comes out real liquidy.
Well, you probably you keep the lid on it, don't you?
Well, you have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you see, nothing's going to evaporate if you do that. So if you were just cooking in an open pot, you would need as much water as probably is in the recipes, but you're containing all of that and it isn't evaporating.
Right.
So you're quite right. It would just be too thin and soupy.
But what I found is that one thing that people often, well, I know I forgot this a bunch of times until I started realizing, if you put vegetables in, especially like onions,
yes,
they give off an awful lot of water. Onions and apples both give off a lot of water. And so sometimes one way I've found to cook something that I didn't really want it to come out, I mean, everything that you cook in a slow cooker is always a little steamed because that's just
yes, how it
works.
Yes, it is.
But if you want to cook something, you don't want it to be in liquid. You know, when you first start cooking with a slow cooker, it's like, liquid, you know, stew, after a while, it's all. Cut up an onion and an apple, throw it in the bottom, put a little meat rack in there, and then you just put whatever you're going to cook, like a chicken, on top. You might have to add a little bit of liquid, like a little bit of chicken broth, or actually, if you do that, just a little water works fine.
Water, sure.
And some spices. And you actually get a really nice baked, you know, sort of wet, moist baked chicken, like it came out of a roasting pan. It's not quite the same because it's a little moister of a cooking, but, you know, I suppose you could probably do that and then take it out. But that comes out really nicely, and the vegetables basically provide all the liquid.
And then the flavors, all the flavors for the vegetables too. Yeah. Oh, that's good. You sound experienced and very careful with that. I'm glad.
I take notes.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much. We appreciate it. Let's go on to line number 4, and I believe someone in Iroquois County. Hello.
I think that would be me, but I'm in Charleston.
Oh, well, my apologies. In Charleston. Go ahead.
This is a wonderful topic for a show. And my own adventure in cooking is a pretty modest one, but I'm happy and proud about it. I decided back in December when it was cold and miserable to make soup for the first time.
Uh-huh.
My wife is a wonderful maker of soup, but soup to me has always been a bit of a mystery. And I decided to make cabbage soup. I took Julia Child's recipe from The Art of French Cooking and made more or less a vegan version of it, leaving out the salt pork, adding some vegetable base and some diced tomatoes, and the result was absolutely wonderful. And I would imagine that there are any number of people in our processed, prefabricated...
Oh, I'm sorry. I think we got you back now. Caller on line 4. I'm sorry. We had another line that was still on the air there. We were getting some beeping. Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention, I'm sure there's so many people in our culture who have never tasted homemade soup. And it's such a wonderful thing to make. It's such a simple thing to make, as I was happy to finally find out. So I'd encourage everybody to try it.
Yes, I made a soup last night. And it only took about 30 minutes, and I was surprised at how good it was. And some of the people who ate it said, "Well, what meat did you use?" I said, "There's no meat in this. It was a potato cubed, a can of diced two onions, which is quite a lot of onions." Two onions chopped up and a cubed potato, peeled and cubed, and a can of tomato a can of tomato paste. And I didn't put thyme in. I put in Herbe de Provence. And then the kicker was a teaspoon of cinnamon and a half a teaspoon of ground allspice. Mm-hmm. And that just made all the difference in the world. And you just thought you were eating the richest. And there's no fat. There was nothing. It was done. It was a Lebanese soup. I remember we talked about it some time ago. But I was so delighted with that last night. So, yeah, get in there and make soups. Sure.
Thanks very much.
All right.
Yes.
Thanks for the call. That is a really great thing. And I wonder if people are somehow put off by the idea that you have to make your own stock, and meat stocks, they can be kind of involved and they take some time, and then you need to let them sit so the fat will render out. And that's great if you have that much time, but you don't necessarily have to do that. You don't have to start with your own homemade meat stock.
Oh, no, you don't. And I think you're right. As he pointed out, so many people haven't made their own soup. I mean, there are soups that don't take more than 10 minutes, You know, and another soup that I like very much is frozen green beans and frozen peas, and put them in water, or chicken broth, or a vegetable broth, but any of that, and just cook them a little bit, and then grind them up in the food processor, and add half and half. I like the fat free half and half, and that's the whole soup. It takes about 10 minutes to make, and the taste that you get is just the freshest taste of beans and the freshest taste of peas.
Okay. We have another caller here that I'm sure we'll get, maybe one after that. We just got a call from someone who was listening earlier for the caller who called in and said she had gotten the sausage-making attachment for her mixer and wanted to know, where do you get casings?
Casings, yes.
Well, here we go. Here someone says, here's a site. It's a catalog called Sausage Maker, and they do have a website, which is www.sausagemaker.com. So you can do that. I would guess also that if people had access to the internet, they could just go into their browser and probably just type in sausage casing.
Yes.
And I'm sure that you could do it that way.
Mr. Google would
fix you right up. Other than that, it would really surprise me if there wouldn't be somewhere, though, in Champaign or Banff.
I think that there is.
Somewhere where you could buy casings.
Someone, I think, was wanting to give some away. That's in my mind. And they had gotten them, and they weren't going to use them, and they wanted to know, how do you get rid of casings? Yeah, okay. Who do you give them to?
I would think that maybe because we do have now a number of butcher shops where you can buy fresh meat. Now, I don't know how many of them might actually make their own sausage. Heck, I know the folks over at Schnucks make sausage. I don't know if they actually make it right there or not.
Oh, I think they do. Because they chose one day not to make a hot Italian sausage, and I had to get the regular Italian sausage and put my own hot in it. Okay. But that was what they had made.
All
yes.
Right. Let's talk with someone in Iroquois County, I believe. This is line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just wanted to mention about crock pot. I've had a crock pot for years, but someone gave us a wild duck last week. Never had fixed one before. I put it in the crock pot with an apple and onion in the cavity and salt and pepper on the outside skin. And after 6 hours, it was wonderful. It was moist, tender, and there was some little greasy broth in the bottom of it. I hadn't added any water.
Oh, I was going to ask. So in a sense, it was dry. I mean, it wasn't braised.
Correct.
Yeah.
I put it in just as it came, you know, it had been dressed.
Yeah.
And I put it in, and it was smallish, so it fit just nicely in the crock pot. And not knowing what was going to come out, because the person that gave it to me had never fixed a wild duck before either.
Uh-huh.
Didn't know what to do, so it was a great success.
It sounds like you came up with the same sort of thing that Alton Brown did. His duck recipe is to boil the duck for 45 minutes and then to roast it.
Well, you know, I had an old recipe book that said something about parboiling.
Yes.
And I didn't do that. I just put it in the crock pot.
but you see, the crock pot took care of that. It sounds good. Oh, I'm glad to know that.
Okay.
Great.
Bye.
Thank
well,
you.
Thanks for the call. We'll see if we can do at least one more here. Savoy is the next person.
Are we running out of time?
Yes, we're getting close. Hi there. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
I was just reading my new edition of Cook's Country, and somebody wrote in saying that there are bags that you can put in crock pots so you don't have to worry about cleaning them.
Oh.
And, I mean, if I have a crock pot in my trailer, the pot doesn't come out.
I see.
All one piece, and it's a pain.
Yeah.
But now you can get bags you can put in them, and when you're finished, you just take the bag out.
That would contain all of the juices in it, and you don't have to put in you wouldn't have to put in a whole lot of liquid.
Oh,
it sounds good. Thank you.
I haven't tried them yet, but I'm going to get them. And then the Lodge pans, I stopped at the Lodge factory in Tennessee.
Yes.
and they have an outlet, and they have, I've never seen so many iron pots. I mean, Dutch ovens and cornbread makers and round chef pans, and, oh, I loved it. It was fun.
I have, let's see, four. I have four Dutch ovens here and three in Madison, Indiana. So I have
seven.
I have seven Dutch ovens, and I love them. I love them very much.
Yeah, they are really nice.
And I have one that's very tall.
Oh.
Yeah, it's exceedingly tall. Well, it's a very old cast iron kettle, but my lid fits it. And it's very tall. It has three little legs on the bottom. That's my favorite one.
Well, this was fun to go to. So
it I would be indeed.
I can't remember the town. I'd have to find it. But they had a billboard out front saying, Garage Store this way. So I thought, why not?
Good for you.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. Well, you know what? I think we're going to have to stop here. I'm really sorry. We have somebody we can't take, but we're pretty much at the end. We can do it again next month if you want.
Yes, we'll do. Well, we'll figure out
something else.
We'll figure out what it'll be.
Well, thanks to everybody who called. It's always
yes,
a good time when we have Doyle here on the first Wednesday of the month at 10 o'clock hour. We talk about cooking something different every time we do it. And I guess the recipes that Doyle gave, maybe his recipes for using the peas for the pesto, we could have that.
Oh, yeah.
If somebody wants to drop us a line, send us an email, postcard, whatever, we'll send the recipes out. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate it. Coming up a little bit later today as part of the Afternoon Magazine, the Illinois legislature was the scene of an intense fight over ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. Leading the charge against the IRA was Phyllis Schlafly. Coming up today in the Afternoon Magazine, we'll be talking with historian Donald Critchlow. He's the author of the political biography, Phyllis Schlafly and Grassroots Conservatism, A Woman's Crusade. She'll be talking with Celeste Quinn, who is the host of the show. In the 1 o'clock hour, the program itself gets underway at noon here on AM 580. Coming up in the next hour of this program, we'll be talking a little bit about the history of vote manipulation in America as we talk with Andrew Gumbel about his book, Steal This Vote. We're going to first, though, take a break for news and update on the markets. Stay tuned.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets, where wheat and corn are lower this morning on profit taking, while Chicago Board of Trade soybean futures